And now we're going to talk about forgiveness. And don't know how you feel about that. Some people like kind of go, ugh, I hate that. There are reasons why people hate it, and I'll talk about that as well. But in particular, like I said to you last night, when it comes to the barriers, the obstacles in our lives, one of the things we want to keep in mind is there's not a barrier that you face that was created by the devil, because the devil can't create anything. There is only one being who has the ability to create, and that's God himself. So what happens, what I said last night, I'll just repeat it again because so many people hear it this way. That I'm not saying that God creates barriers in your life. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is God creates good things, and the devil hijacks good things and turns them into barriers. Last night I talked about fear as an example of that. I want to talk about forgiveness in that same sense, and keep in mind that if God's job description is to cover all of creation with his nature, his strategy is you and I. That was his strategy in the garden, right? He puts Adam and Eve there, puts his nature inside them, and says, be fruitful and multiply. And he's fulfilling his job description to cover all of creation with his nature, but his goal is to do it through the use of all of us. We become participants in that. By taking dominion over the creation, like I talked about, is not some military or political thing. It's all about the spiritual realm and our ability to breathe in from the heavens and out into the earth, and in from the heavens and out into the earth. So it takes it out of that whole, how do we, you know, get the right politicians in the right place and the right strategies in the right places. It just, you become you and let God operate through you, and you're taking dominion over the creation. It's that simple and it's that beautiful. But here's the thing. If God's nature is love and he's trying to spread his nature all across the earth and his strategy is you, then if I'm the devil, and I'm not, like I said last night, what I might try to do is get you somehow sidetracked from your ability to love as freely and generously as God does. I would look for a way to say, listen, God's love will change everything, so I'm going to keep humans from getting to the point where they can give that away. And so while that is our place, we're that conduit between his love expressed earthward and his love expressed through us to the people around us. Well, we're the conduit for that. There's a very simple way to interrupt that, and that is to get you wounded, angry, or bitter. Very difficult to be a conduit for love when you're woundy. I hate it when I get woundy. I do hate it. Wounded, angry, or bitter, right? And if we get in those conditions, what happens is it's even hard for us to receive his love, which is an important way to understand a verse we'll talk about in a couple minutes. But so when we get to that place where we can't give it away, we're also in a place where we can't receive it. And so our soul gets kind of stuck, kind of constipated, if you will. I've never said that term teaching this before, but it's a perfect fit, right? So when we can't give it away, we also can't receive it. That's why, here's the verse I was going to mention, Matthew 7, Jesus essentially says, hey, if you don't forgive, my Father in heaven won't. Every time you hear a verse that makes God sound small and petty, look at it again and look at it in the original language and ask the question, what's God really saying? Matthew 7:1 isn't about God going, if you don't forgive, I'm not going to forgive you. He's saying the capacity to love flows through you. And if you're not flowing, you're not receiving. It's not available to someone who can't give it away. And it's a simple fact to say, if you've got a pipe and it's full of water and it can't get out the other end, there's no room for more water in it. God's trying to free us from the very thing that has us stuck in our own journey. And yet when we hear it, a lot of times we think, you know, God's being petty, or worse yet, here's what happens. We get hurt in a serious way, whatever that might mean to you, whatever your kind of serious woundings are, and we sit down with some well-meaning pastor, some well-meaning counselor, well-meaning believer, and they say, well, you just need to forgive. Now, how many of you have a positive response when that's what you hear? I saw no hands come up. It's okay, because I wouldn't have a positive response either. I'm almost done with this lozenge, by the way. Sorry. You will receive a recording in a week in your email, and it will have me chewing on a lozenge. This is what happens as the day gets longer. So the idea is that God wants to spread his nature across the creation. He wants to do it through you. Satan's strategy against that is to find a way to clog your pipes. And listen, probably more than any time I've been alive. And by the way, I've lived through 88 reasons why Jesus is coming in 88. I've lived through every prediction of the second coming of Jesus. I still think we're not even close, by the way. And I'll tell you very quickly my reason why, because in Matthew 24, when Jesus is talking about the end of time, he says, listen, before it all happens, there's gonna be wars and rumors of wars, check. You know, pestilence and sickness, check. Bite my tongue, because I'm not gonna say the next things. They weren't in the Bible, they were just in my head. And he talked about all these kind of conflicts that are gonna be happening. And he says, but all those things are just birth pangs. And then he tells us what will be the clue to the beginning of the end. And it's not about the problems, it's about the solution. He says, but when this gospel of the kingdom is preached to the four corners of the earth, then I'll come back. Listen, I don't hear the gospel of the kingdom most places I go. I hear the gospel of atonement. I hear the gospel of sin management, which is not a gospel at all. But the gospel of the kingdom, it's been rare for me to visit somewhere and have people actually talk about the kingdom in the way that I believe Jesus talked about the kingdom. And well before he's coming back, we are going to be spreading the gospel of the kingdom, God's presence among men, and our ability to think in a different way, to be able to acknowledge it, receive it, and participate in it. That gospel of the kingdom, when that's going to the four corners of the earth, Jesus is back. Right? The sickness and stuff, the wars, all that stuff, it's just gonna get worse because the creation is falling apart. It's eagerly awaiting the revealing of the sons and daughters of God. Well, here we are. Let's shine our light and let's do this thing called love people, right? And so God's love through us gets clogged up when whatever wound we feel gets us, instead of loving and giving generously, gets us afraid and stingy and bitter and all those different things. And so some well-meaning pastor or counselor says to you, well, you just need to forgive. And we go, I don't need to forgive. You can't tell me to forgive. Because what we think is Matthew 7:1. Well, if you don't forgive, then God's not going to forgive you. So this whole thing is just all weighted. The weight's all on you to get this right. And once you could finally get it right, then God would be free to forgive you. As if you're somehow binding God. So before we talk about what forgiveness is, I want to take a couple minutes to talk about what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Right? Forgiveness is not when you someone does something to you and you go, I'm going to pretend I don't think about it anymore. Listen, if you don't think about it, your nervous system still carries it. So you can not think about it all you want to, but when you see them at the grocery store, your nervous system goes, and you go, hey, Steve, you know, a little twitch going on. Good to see you. You know, and your nervous system knows you haven't really let go of it. And if your nervous system knows, surely God knows. So forgiveness isn't forgetting. And by the way, forgiveness isn't denial. I don't know if you know what denial is. It's not just a river in Egypt. Right. Denial, I heard one person say denial is an acronym, and it stands for don't even know I am lying. The human creature is the only one that I'm aware of that has the capacity to lie to itself and believe it. So denial is literally when we lie to ourselves and we believe our own lies. It's why people who are in denial will tell you, you know, there's something green coming out of their nose, and they're going, there's nothing green coming out of my nose. And you're staring right at it, and they're going, no, it's not there. Again, all the illustrations, I'm probably not going to go to most of those because there's so much denial rampant in the world today. I'm only going to talk about just made-up examples. But denial is that thing that we say, again, when we say, listen, I've forgiven, because, and here's the clue for me with a lot of people is, I forgive easily. So many other signs of passive aggression and anger in their life, they just say, I forgive easily. Things just roll off my back. And yet, passive aggressively, like they're insulting people around them, and they're being sarcastic all the time. They've got all these signs, kind of these covert signs of anger, but they say they forgive easily when they carry the outwardly and covertly all the symptoms of that they're super ticked off. So forgiveness isn't denial. We're not going to pretend it didn't happen. We're not going to lie to ourselves about it. Here's a big one. Forgiveness isn't repression. Repression is that thing where you take what's on the outside of you and you put it on the inside. And you carry it around in your guts. And so that way on the outside, you know, you can go, hey, Steve. And inside I've got an ulcer and I've got, you know, muscle spasms. And I've got all this stuff going on. Because on the outside I've been able to kind of put all the stuff on the inside. And by the way, your body will pay a price. Many times when I've prayed for people for physical healing, one of the key elements is helping them forgive certain people in their lives. And it's not simply because if you forgive, God will heal you. It's because you're holding something toxic inside your body. And as long as you hold something toxic inside of your body, don't be surprised if your body responds to toxicity through pain and illness. And by the way, forgiveness is not codependency. And by that, I mean, it doesn't mean being a doormat and letting people walk all over you. Jesus 100% forgave the money changers in the temple while he sent them fleeing out the door. He loved them out the door. Forgiveness is by no means a lack of boundaries. What forgiveness does is it allows us to set boundaries out of love instead of out of fear. When we can set boundaries out of love, we're standing up for what's right instead of defending ourselves against what still hurts on the inside. But it's the motive of boundaries that says I've either forgiven or I haven't. Listen, you can set boundaries with unhealthy people and ought to. So I walk past Steve, you just happen to be right here in the front row, and I can just pick on you a little bit. And so I walk past Steve, and as I go by, he kicks me in the shins. And I'm like, ooh, dang, Steve, that's kind of mean of you. I'm like, just kidding, you know, because that's everyone's favorite lie, just kidding. The next time I walk past, I'm taking a wide circle around him. That's not unforgiveness, that's wisdom. And by the way, forgiveness isn't reconciliation. There's nowhere in Scripture that we see that forgiveness also equals reconciling relationships. You can forgive people and stay out of relationship with them. It just means that they no longer have power over you, and they don't have the power to tell you to be in relationship with them, and they don't have the power to control your inner life. But you don't have to be reconciled to them. That's not a scriptural thing. That's kind of a cultural thing that we've imposed on people. So there's all these things we believe about forgiveness so that when someone says you need to forgive, it's no wonder so many people go, I don't want that. It makes me a wimp. Forgiveness is one of the most powerful acts of the human will you'll ever discover. Jesus himself did it one night sweat drops of blood in the act of choosing to forgive every one of us. It's the most muscular act that Jesus did. The choice, the willful choice, not my will, but yours. And in choosing to do that, he knew what he was doing on behalf of all of us. And it took every ounce of effort in his body to choose to forgive. That's what forgiveness is not. Now let's talk about this powerful gift that God gives us. See, forgiveness is God's gift to allow you to love freely in the face of pain and evil. I'll say it again. Forgiveness is God's gift. It's a gift to you to allow you to love freely in the face of pain and evil. Now listen carefully. I didn't say to accept the treatment of painful and evil people. I said for you to remain a conduit of God's love in the face of the pain that you've experienced in your life and the potential of facing evil in the life that we all live here on the earth. If you have concerns about that, I want to recommend the book Bold Love by Dan Allender, where he's got a chapter called Loving Evil People and a chapter called Loving a Fool. Because God loves evil people and God loves a fool. But to use Dan Allender's word, he says, he doesn't love those two categories the same way he loves just a plain old sinner. Right? He loves evil people with consequences and he loves a fool. By the way, that chapter kind of messed me up because I know Jesus said, don't use that word. Don't ever call people a fool. And I had to go read the chapter to discover that the book of Proverbs tells us exactly what a fool is multiple times. It says, a fool says in his heart, there is no God. And again, the book of Proverbs tells us there is a characteristic of a fool. And so we love them with boundaries and consequences. That's as much a form of love as is generosity and giving. So forgiveness allows us to love freely from a place of our own love that we've received, even in the face of pain and evil. But that doesn't mean in agreement with pain and evil, and it doesn't mean accepting the treatment of pain or evil people. In many cases, it means standing against it. I'm gonna make sure that sinks in for a second. But we should talk about what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is God's solution to when we've been hurt in some way, and hurt in some way that anger becomes our response to that. And so I want to talk about what happens in this particular diagram. Everyone see this okay? In this particular diagram, are you guys seeing it up there? Look how beautiful that is. Person one, person two. I feel like the cat in the hat. Thing one and thing two. If this is the sinner, then this is the person sinned against. I don't like the word victim and sinny. Sin's kind of weird. So this is the person sinned against over here. God is looking at this and says, listen, when you sin against somebody and your response is anger, God looks at the whole thing with kind of an awareness of the human soul and says, look, I have an answer to the whole thing. And the answer is about your freedom, not about the other person's release. And it may or may not release that person, but it's really about your freedom. And what it says is, if you are the person sinned against, and we're going to talk about this person forgiving, if you're the person sinned against, then forgiveness is the key to your freedom. Now, if you're sitting here going, well, good, it's about time, I'm going to get some help there, just remember, in someone's life, you're this person. So lest you get kind of like thinking that, yeah, all those people who've ruined my life, someone else is thinking you might have ruined theirs. So what God knows, and what many of you know already, is that anger isn't a primary emotion, it's a secondary emotion. And by that, what I mean is anger is our response to something called pain and fear. And pain and fear, we use anger as a way to feel strong when pain and fear makes us feel weak. So underneath all of our anger is some sense that either somebody hurt me or might hurt me, or some sense that somebody's going to do something that I'm afraid of. And in that, our natural response, kind of like a scab growing quickly over a wound, is to go, we come back with anger. Here's what I mean by that. So Halloween has just passed, but let's just say that, you know, a week ago or whatever it might be, I'm walking through the house and maybe getting ready to put the corgis out in the backyard, and Polly's thinking, I'm going to scare the crud out of Bob. So she stands in one of the rooms on the way to me putting the dogs out back, and on the way there, she leaps out in front of me. And when she leaps out in front of me, what's the human response to being scared like that? We don't go, oh no, I'm so scared. I'm so very afraid. Please don't hurt me. No, the response is, what are you thinking, right? Anger comes up because fear makes us feel weak. Same thing, we're, you know, putting the doghouse together where I'm going to sleep that night. You know, I got a hammer and a nail, and I accidentally swing the hammer, and I hit my nail. I don't go, oh, that hurts so much. This hurts so bad. It just makes me want to cry. I go, Dad, Christian cuss. No. So you know what a Christian cuss is, right? It's all those words that sound like cuss words, but we know they're not really. We all have a list. So pain and fear feels to us like anger. And what God is saying to us is, look, you can just try to be in denial about your anger, but I want to heal you. But here's the thing. In every act of God in the human soul, there's always two parts. There's our part and there's God's part. Our part is almost always an act of the will. God's part is always the miraculous. Our part is almost always choosing obedience, right? And I had a sweet conversation with Julie a moment ago about what obedience really means. Obedience means to hear and allow the thing heard to be produced in us. Our role is to do the thing, to make the choice, to allow God to do what he's doing, to surrender our will to God. God's job is to do the miraculous thing that he's been wanting to do all along. But he sits back and he says, listen, you got a choice to make. You can either hang on to this for the rest of your life if you choose, develop ulcers, muscle spasms, all the different things, or you can forgive. And if we understand what forgiveness is, it becomes a beautiful experience of release and healing instead of this kind of grudging letting go of something that we feel like gives us power over the bad guy. So here's what happens. When we feel from this person, when we feel wounded by them, we feel that, like, I need to, I need to bring justice into the life of the sinner and healing into the life of the wounded one. And so we think that anger is our strategy to do that. I will make them pay, and I shall feel better if they pay. Which is one of the big lies. I was about to say the biggest, but there's so many bigger than that. It's one of the big lies, right? Somehow I'm going to make them pay enough that I feel better. How many of you ever, don't raise your hand. But think for a minute. How many of you ever gotten revenge on somebody and realized it didn't feel as good as you thought, right? That revenge just kind of makes you more like them and less like yourself. Justice is different than revenge. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But what we think is, if we hang on to our anger, we're going to bring healing to our circumstance and justice to them. And God says, look, I'm the master of both of those things, and you're trying to do it without me. You're down on the bottom half of anatomy of a stronghold, and you're trying to be your own healer and your own justice maker. And if you would just bring me into the process, I can allow forgiveness to happen because I've already made a way for it to happen. So forgiveness isn't something that we do. It's something that God has already done that we tap into. Forgiveness was accomplished on the cross. And so it's available to us to receive, but it's also available for us to give because God has provided the mechanism for it. So as long as we're trying to use anger to do it, we're never going to get it done because as James 1:20 says, the righteousness of, or the anger of man cannot achieve the righteousness of God. It can't, it won't. But forgiveness will do both once we understand what it is. And forgiveness is, like I said, it's two things. It's a choice, and then it's an act of God. And the choice is I choose to live with the consequences of what's done to me, what's been done to me, and no longer lay it to the other person's account. Remember, I told you it was hard. I choose to live with the consequences of what's been done to me and no longer lay it to the other person's account. Here's the crazy part of that. You're already living with the consequences. It's not as if you can somehow, through an act of might and will, decide to not live with those consequences. The tricky part is to embrace the consequences. Listen, not as if you caused them, but to say, I'll take them and not hold it to their account. And one of the reasons that's so important is because you can't do anything about something that you're not taking responsibility for. So I'll take the consequence. I'll live with those consequences. Instead of being in denial or angry or bitter about it, I'm gonna live with them. And I'm not going to hold it to their account. That decision makes three very crucial things happen. When we make that decision, it's essentially the decision, you walk into the boss's office and he says, look, you're fired. And you turn and look and you go, look, you can't fire me, I quit. The same outcome, but you chose to take the responsibility for it instead of let your boss have the power over you, right? We say, I'm going to live with the consequences and not hold it against you because I want to engage in something powerful and spiritual and not stay in the pit, not stay in the mud. And the first thing it does is when you choose to forgive, it gives you your mind back. How many of you know that the more angry you are and the longer you've been angry, the more real estate they own inside your mind? And as long as you've been carrying that around and however powerfully you've been carrying it around, they may have like a high rise in there, right? They're kind of doing a beachfront property inside your mind. And the problem for us is we sometimes wonder why I have such a hard time controlling my own thoughts. Consider that it's possible, that it's impossible to submit to God what you yourself have already given to somebody else. If they have your mind, your thoughts are likely to be less and less in control. So when you make that choice, as difficult as it is, it gives back the mind of the person sinned against. And it says, look, I need my mind back. And to let go of, not to let go of what happened, but to say, I choose to live with it and won't hold it to their account, I get my mind back. The second thing that happens is it puts justice in God's hands. Because before they ever sinned against you, they sinned against God. In the choice to do whatever they did, in the actions to move towards doing whatever they did, they were already in sin against God to say, I'm going to do harm to him. The choice to do that was a sin against your creator and their creator, to be specific. And so what happens is when we put the sin here, this becomes no longer ours to deal with, and the issue of justice is no longer ours to deal with. And what happens, you guys understand this, when we give God the opportunity for justice, it's now his turn. God is the master of justice, but here's the tricky part. If you're doing this just to get God to take over the forgiveness part, the justice part, you're not forgiving, you're just hiring a hitman. I've forgiven, sick him, God. Go get him now. I promise I've forgiven, really. I don't think that word means what you think that word means. I don't think you've forgiven. I think you're just asking for a much larger retribution, right? And so, but when we truly forgive and no longer lay it at their feet, then God says, listen, this is between me and him or her. Years and years ago, I was working with a woman whose father had abandoned their family when she was about 5 years old. She was the oldest of four children under the age of five. Her mom kind of went off the deep end when dad left, and she was left as a five-year-old raising her three younger siblings. She hated her dad. However, the logic of the nervous system would say that she spent most of her 30s and early 40s being in relationships just like that where men would abandon her again and again because she had a pattern in her life and she was experiencing that pattern over and over again. She comes into my office and she says, look, it still all goes back to my dad because he left us. And he left us all alone. He shows up about every 10 years and I'm sick of it. He wants to know if we've forgiven. There's no way we have. I said, So sorry for what you've been through. It's got to be incredibly painful. I can see that you've been through it even, you know, other than just your dad. Let's talk about forgiveness a little bit and see, not if your dad's version of forgiveness, but maybe there's a way, a version of forgiveness that would set you free. Took her through this process that we'll finish up and I'll teach the process I'm talking about. On a Monday night, the following Monday, she showed up and she said, you won't believe what happened this weekend. I said, I'm game, tell me. She said, it's been 11 years since I heard from my dad. He called on Friday evening and said, hey, can I get together with you guys this weekend? And all of us kind of grudgingly do, because that's what we do every decade that he shows up. And on Saturday, we all spent some time with him and we all kind of left. And later that day, my dad called me and said, hey, something's different with you. Can just you and I get together tomorrow? And her countenance began to soften. And she said, you know what we did Sunday? She said, we did everything I wish we'd done when I was growing up. He taught me some chords on the guitar. We sang old songs together. We talked about things. We really built the first bridge ever between the two of us. Listen, justice isn't when we get an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, right? Justice is when wrong things are made right. Our perspective of that is, listen, eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and all you end up with is a bunch of blind, toothless people. Our old counseling center was on the bottom floor of a building, and the upper floor was a dentist and optician. I just love doing this teaching in that building. It was so fun. It's business for the people upstairs. But real justice is when the things that are wrong in the human condition are made right by the God who created us. We just don't know how to do that. We just keep doing damage and keep doing damage and keep doing damage and then pass on not only from generation to generation, but family to family and people group to people group. And next thing you know, we all are blind and toothless. But justice is when we allow God to step in here and we no longer have that need for justice. And now we come to the third part is we put justice in God's hands. And number C, the real key to this, is this makes the second part possible. And that is this part up here, making this decision gives you back your mind, puts justice in God's hands, and makes the healing that God wants to give you possible. Not that it was impossible for him before, but as long as you're holding on to the coal, he can heal your hands, but they're going to burn again a split second later. You let go of the bitterness inside. You let go of the pain that you've been carrying inside, and now he can heal you and you stay healed. One of the things that I think is important to understand about the cross is that it's more than just a place that Jesus died. It's a place that Jesus took the sins of the world on himself. And listen carefully, that's not a theory, that's not a theology. If you think about the 24 hours preceding his death, everything that happened to him in those 24 hours are things that you've experienced in your life. He was stripped naked in front of the whole world and beaten, the hair pulled out of his face, and I'm not going to go on into all the things, but he was shamed and accused of things. He was exchanged for somebody who was a criminal. I mean, if you want to think about abandonment, all of his friends ran away that night. Every possible thing that you've been through, Jesus experienced inside those 24 hours prior to his death on the cross. And what he was doing was he was gathering up the right to say whatever you've been through, I have too. But I'm going to do something with it because you were never designed to carry that. I was. I'm not just going to the cross to forgive the sins you've committed, but I'm going to the cross to forgive the sins committed against you. And so he picks up that abuse and picks up that shame and picks up the beatings and picks up this being spit in the face and picks up all that stuff and says, listen, I'm going to earn the right to take from you everything you've experienced if you will make the choice to let me. And what he says is once you've made this choice, he begins healing by saying, everything you've experienced, I have too, and I can take your pain and give you my life. And I can take your woundedness and give you my healing. And I can take the things that were done to you and give you what your Father wants to give you all along. And the exchange happens not in the moment you forgive, but in the moment he responds to that forgiveness by saying, the healing I've been wanting to give you and the justice you've been looking for are both accomplished in the cross. Forgiveness isn't something you do, it's something that's been done already, and you tap into the work of Jesus on the cross. So when you make the choice here, he says, now, all the work of the cross is available to you. Not just what you've done, but what's been done to you. And as you pray through the process of forgiving, he says, let me take that. Let me take that. Let me take that. It sounds kind of like this. Real quick. I've worked really hard on this, so I'm going to tell the story. You don't have to feel sorry for me. I'm pretty good. If I'm not, I don't know it yet. But when I was 14, my dad left for the last time. And so I spent years working on all my father wounds. I just didn't even got to my mom's stuff yet, right? Spent years working on all that stuff. But somewhere in my teenage years, after knowing Jesus and really beginning to walk with him, I wrote him a letter, not realizing that this was kind of part of the thing, but it sounded something like this. Hey, Dad, I choose to forgive you. Let me tell you what I'm forgiving you for. See, in Matthew 18, when the king forgave the person that owed him money, he didn't just say, I forgive you. He went and counted up the accounts and measured everything that he was forgiving before he did. So, Dad, here's what I forgive you for. I forgive you for leaving the family. I forgive you for hurting my mom. I forgive you for never fathering me. I forgive you for it. I went through the list. I forgive you for all these things. But then the reality is there's some stuff that I'd been carrying that really Jesus wants to take from me. And so I said, these things left me afraid. They left me feeling abandoned. They left me feeling alone. They left me feeling like I could never be a father. And on, there's things that we've carried in us because of the things done to us. And those are the things that Jesus is built to carry, and you are not. So forgiveness isn't just you kind of swallowing hard and going, I choose to forgive. Forgiveness is tapping into the work of the cross in the very specifics of the things you've carried that Jesus wants to take from you. So what I'd love to do is give you guys a little bit of time. You were hoping the time was over, right? But the reality is some of you guys are carrying things you're not meant to carry. And some of you are not able to love the way you've wanted to love because you've been holding on to pain and fear because of circumstances in your life. And Jesus is offering at every given moment, make a choice. I choose to live with the consequence of that and never lay it to their charge, never lay it to their account. But here's what they did, and name it. And here's what it did to me, and ask him to take it. Now forgiveness is no longer just you grudgingly trying to, you know, swallow hard, but forgiveness is you giving away something you've been carrying for however long you were never designed to carry. So take a moment. Let's get still. You probably already have a name in your mind. If not, just ask the Lord. Lord, is there somebody that you have in mind for me to forgive today? And as that name is in your mind one way or the other, if you are ready, I want you to say between you and the Lord, Lord, in this moment, I choose to live with the consequences of what they've done and not charge it to their account anymore. Listen, I'm not going to minimize that. Jesus sweat drops of blood making that choice. So take a moment to make that choice. as you make that choice, feel your mind coming back to you. It's your mind, but you've given it away. Allow Jesus, allow God to become the justice maker. More important, begin to tell him, God, I am forgiving them for, and name the things. It's not to recite them, not to one more time go through the things you're wounded by, but rather to say, this is the thing I'm letting go of now, and this is the thing I'm letting go of now, and this is the thing I'm letting go of now. And if you've worked your way through that part of the list, if you haven't, you'll catch up in a minute. But if you've worked your way through that part of the list, now begin to tell him this. But God, when that happened, I felt alone. I felt violated. I felt dirty. I felt unseen. You just tell him that what you've been carrying. And again, not to recite it and kind of go through it one more time, but simply to say, this is the thing I'm asking you to take. And I always like to say, so Lord, as you take those things away from me, what are you giving me back? So if you're at that place in the process, just Lord, as you take away my pain and you take away my fear and you take away the things that I've carried in my soul, what are you giving me in exchange for those things? Then I'd like you to take a moment to go through the process again. But instead of the person that you just forgave, I want you to put your name there. God, I choose to forgive and put your own name in the blank. I choose to forgive me. It's the exact same process. I'm going to live with the consequences of what I've done, but not hold it against myself anymore. Choice. And Jesus holds out his arms and say, tell me what you did. You just tell him. Jesus, look at the harm I've done to myself and people I care about. Look at the ways I've ruined my life that seems irreparable. I forgive myself for the choices I've made that have landed me in this circumstance today. And then the second part. And when I did that, I made myself feel stupid. I made myself feel shame. I made myself feel fear. And again, not to recite those things, but to hand them over to him with the biblically informed expectation that he intends to take those things from you. Not just the sin, but the shame. There's a piece we're going to add tonight. We just want to talk about this idea that sometimes what holds us in our relationships with other people isn't just the bitterness we hold towards them, the anger, the ways that they've hurt us, but sometimes we've formed a connection with them either through our anger or through the choices to become enmeshed like we talked about earlier. We've formed a connection that we stay connected. As we described, we're designed for connection but not for enmeshment. But there can be relationships that we've formed, again, either through negative feelings and judgments and bitterness, or through crossing lines and boundaries where we've formed a connection with someone or group of people or several specific people. And that connection still kind of like carrying weight around with us, keeps us from being able to release our soul in your presence. So again, let's just ask the Lord, is there anyone or a group of people that I've formed a connection with that also holds me back? I've gone past the two become one, or I've entered into a relationship that's really not what you've designed me for. And when I did that, I've given away a part of me and I've taken on a part of them in an unhealthy way. And if the Lord brings that kind of situation to mind, I just want you to ask him now, Lord, as I see it through those lenses, would you break that connection that's been formed between us? It can be the very person you just forgave, because hate is a relationship. Anger is a relationship. It can be someone else that for other reasons you connected to. As you ask him to cut those connections, ask him to give back what you lost, to give back to you what you gave to the other person. But then also ask him to take out of you the things that have been left in you from that connection. Lord, that connection has been like dragging a weight around. And today I ask you to cut that connection and give me back a whole soul and remove from me any part of them that I'm still carrying. And as you ask him to give back those parts of you, just pay attention to what he says. What are the things he's giving back? Just take a few moments to sit and listen. Let him do his part. So Father, as we've brought those hurt, scared parts to you, as we've brought our own judgments and our own unhealthy connections to you, we're grateful that you're the God who restores, the God who heals, God who intends to and gives us the things we need to be whole. Would you, for a moment, show us what life looks like in this next week, as we no longer carry those things with us? Just give us a glimpse of life next week as we've left those things behind today. In Jesus' name we pray.